Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All Things Therapy with Lisa Tahir, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Things Therapy. I'm your host, Lisa Tahir. I'm a licensed clinical social worker practicing as an intuitive psychotherapist. I'd love to hear from you. You may reach out to me at or through my website, which is nolatherapy.com. It's the abbreviation for New Orleans, Los Angeles Therapy. And in the last few weeks on my show, I've been really stressing that I would love to hear from you as my listener. Topics you want to hear about, guests you would like me to interview, and if you have a way that I could connect with them to invite them on, I'd love your feedback. I appreciate your support for the last 2 years by subscribing to this show, and I welcome you to do that if you have not through iTunes and Google Play. The show is All Things Therapy there. I have a YouTube channel also, which is called NOLA Therapy, NOLATHERAPY, and I'd love to have more subscribers there as well. I post the shows about once a month from the past month, so you can listen to them through YouTube. You can schedule sessions with me through NOLA Therapy. Additionally, you can find my show, if it's easier, through the LA Talk Radio show page I have on Channel 1 here at LA Talk Radio. And the show is posted along with links to each guest. And for instance, my guest today is from a really amazing international nonprofit called ChildrenIncorporated.org. And we're going to post a link if you want to donate to them and sponsor a child. So we'll get there in a few moments, but I just really want to connect with you listening. And if you're inclined to support my work, I would love that through my crowdfunding campaign that I started through Patreon. Their site is patreon.com/allthingstherapy. You can give as little as $1 a month to help with my work and bringing you guests each week. And today's show is additionally sponsored by Audible. They offer you over 180,000 book titles to choose from. And as my listener, they will give you a free month subscription along with an audiobook download of your choice. And you can check that out by going to audibletrial.com/allthingstherapy. So my guest who will be with us today momentarily is Shelley Callahan. She is the Director of Development for Children Incorporated. And if you're at your computer and want to pull up the site, it's childrenincorporated.org. They are an international nonprofit that provides resources for children living in poverty in both the U.S. and abroad. And in their mission, there are three things that are important to them. They believe that children deserve, 1, education, 2, hope, and 3, opportunity. And pursuit of that mission, they provide children that are sponsored with food, clothing, healthcare, and educational support. And we're going to talk more about how they come about and how we can help. Welcome, Shelley.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. How are you today?
I'm doing wonderful.
Awesome. Where do you want to lead us in our discussion and dialogue about Children Incorporated?
Yeah, well, you gave such a wonderful introduction in explaining what we do. There's so many things that we could talk about based just on that. I do love that you pointed out exactly what our mission is all about, and to really focus in on how we provide education, hope, and opportunity to children. We do it in a few different ways. As you mentioned, really the bread and butter of our organization is our sponsorship program that we've had since the beginning of Children Incorporated back in the 1960s. Yeah. And through our sponsorship program, we partner sponsors who are individuals of any kind, of any background, who are interested in helping a specific child. And our goal is that that child, is through sponsorship, is provided with, as you said, basic needs, so that they are able to overcome any barriers in their life because of poverty that might keep them from going to school and performing well. So that's really the focus of what we try to do. Yeah. And we are so grateful to have over 8,000 sponsored children in 23 countries around the world.
That's amazing. And you all reach over 20,000 children annually, correct?
We do. As I just said, we have over 8,000 children enrolled in our program, but the reason that that number is so, you know, double that is because the impact of what we are able to do through some of our special funds, which is another really awesome way that you can help children in need outside of just our regular sponsorship program, is we have funds where we build schools all over the world. We build houses for families. We build dormitories at boarding schools for children. We have a mosquito net fund for children to protect them from mosquito-borne illnesses. We have feeding programs in the U.S. and abroad. So we're doing much more outside of our sponsorship program. So because of that, we're able to reach a lot more children.
Well, I think that's really important and very cool, because children have unique needs in the various areas and cities and towns where they're living. And so a mosquito net to protect children from mosquito-borne illnesses wouldn't be necessary, say, in an inner city of America, as opposed to some of the work you do in Africa and in other cities, or even in Central America. So I think that's so cool that you work with the local schools and partner with them to find out what kids there really need, and then that's what you serve and address.
And I love that you said that, because that's one of my favorite things about Children Incorporated. You're hitting on so many great points. We work with right around 300 affiliated projects around the world. And when I say that, I mean schools, orphanages, community centers. And within each of those projects, we have a volunteer coordinator. So this is a dedicated teacher, principal, social worker that has decided that, you know, they're so passionate about the children that they work with on a daily basis that, you know, they want to work with our program. And in doing so, they are providing directly to the children exactly what they need. And it's one of the best things that I think that we're able to do that really sets us apart from other sponsorship organizations, is that we leave it up to the volunteer coordinators, who know the children the best, live in the communities, you know exactly what the children might need, and we let them make those decisions. That is, you know, under the blanket of basic needs, to make sure that the child is healthy, that they have adequate food, clothing, hygiene items, school supplies. Sometimes it's tuition. If, you know, a lot of times outside of the U.S., school is not free. So we leave it up to those volunteer coordinators to decide, so that we feel so confident, you know, ourselves as an organization, and to tell our sponsors, like, these kids are getting exactly what they need.
Yes. And before we came live, I had mentioned to you, Shelley, that I was on your site just kind of scrolling through some things. And for our listeners, when you go to the site, childrenincorporated.org, let me just get back there really fast. You can click on, your projects around the world, select a region. And it spans from Africa to Appalachia here in the U.S., Argentina, Bolivia, and I noticed Louisiana, because I had mentioned to you I'm a native of New Orleans. I live between New Orleans and Los Angeles. And when I clicked, it was cool that the volunteer coordinator there works with the needs that kids in poverty have in the city of New Orleans, which is unique and different than even, say, Detroit, where is another city that you work with. And so I thought it was cool, additionally, that there were other links. If a sponsor wants to send their child Christmas gifts or extra money or a letter, a card, that you can send it to, is it the school that's kind of the dissemination point, to the liaison between the sponsors and the children?
Yes, it is. If we're really proud of the personal connection that we're also able to give our sponsors with their sponsored child. So, you know, through our sponsorship, you're going to receive a updated progress report about the child. You receive letters from them where they can tell you about their interests and their hobbies and what their family is like. And what's so wonderful about that is that you really get to feel like you have a connection with this child in a special way. And then, as you said, when they have a, you know, it's no obligation whatsoever, but you're welcome to send them packages within the United States, where, you know, we can regulate more the delivery of said packages. But you can, you know, send them something special. If it's their, you know, if they've told you what their favorite color is, you could buy them an outfit in that color. You can get them a stuffed animal, if their favorite animal. And so those gifts are sent directly to the school, you know, care of our volunteer coordinator with the child's name on it, and the coordinator makes sure that the child, you know, gets the gift, you know, at the appropriate time, right before their birthday, or, you know, if it's, you know, for the holidays, before they go on holiday break. So it's such a special part. I know I sponsor a child in Kentucky, and I love to be able to send her, you know, notes and special things. She likes to write and she likes to draw. So I buy her, you know, crayons and markers and notepads, and it's just, you know, it's wonderful to be able to do extra things, you know, like that, that are, you know, go beyond what the $30 a month for sponsorship provides, and really show a child, you know, that you are interested in them.
And going back to your mission of hope, it's the feeling of hope, the emotion of hope that really helps us move through challenging times and difficult times, to push through and find kind of that grit inside. Without hope, it's just, you know, really hard to even exist. So these children receiving the support they have fundamentally, and then I'm imagining that the additional personalization of it is just really special on top of something already special.
We talk about that a lot here at Children Incorporated, because you're exactly right. It's not just about providing children with the basic needs, with these like tangible items. A lot of time, children coming from poverty, you know, a lot of issues go along with poverty. It's not just that lack of basic necessities. You know, it's stressful for these children. A lot of times they are not living with their biological parents. They might be living with a family member or a grandparent. You know, parents living in poverty are out of the picture for many different reasons. They might have to work out of state, you know, because it's the only place they can find a job, or they might unfortunately be in jail, or they might unfortunately be, you know, deceased. And there's so many different things that these children are going through. And, you know, outwardly they can seem, you know, a lot of times like they're just happy kids, but, you know, inwardly they're actually like have had a lot of trauma in their lives, and, you know, they haven't had anyone tell them that they love them, because their parents are, you know, busy worrying about paying bills and making really hard decisions about, you know, whether to buy food or pay the, you know, keep the electricity on. And so encouraging a child, really, we consider it to be just as valuable as providing them, you know, with like the actual stuff. You know, it's like it can mean so much to a child, that a stranger knows, you know, that doesn't know them, that might never ever meet them, cares about them and cares about their well-being and wants them to do well. And when a child has self-esteem, you know, they're more likely to go to school, they're more likely to, you know, pay attention in class because they're not feeling self-conscious. And that's a really, really big part of, you know, the connection that we want to make between sponsors and their sponsored child, is that, you know, there's that they can, you know, the sponsor can really, you know, support the child, you know, emotionally as well.
I'm thinking as you're talking, Shelley, that for children living in rural areas, isolated areas, and even inner city areas where there might be a high propensity of say substance abuse or even abuse, especially if a child is easily isolated in a rural community, that participation with Children Incorporated, I think, probably statistically lowers the rates of abuse and even potentially drug abuse and addiction and chemical dependency, because there's an extra layer of accountability, somebody looking out for the child. Where are they and what is going on? I wonder if you all have found that in your research and work.
You know, that's really interesting, because, you know, beyond as far as Children Incorporated, you know, is concerned, you know, where we are responsible for, you know, the making sure that the child is, you know, getting the donations and being provided the basic needs. And, you know, our coordinators that we work with, who I really consider to be the ones that are doing the really incredible work, you know, they're making it possible for us to do what we do. They are the ones that are, you know, doing the home visits, monitoring, you know, what the children have going on. Absolutely. Parents have to, you know, a guardian has to agree to let the child be in our sponsorship program. So, yeah, there is a certain amount of, you know, accountability there that parents have to, and, you know, even if not really able to participate, that, you know, they are, you know, that they're very aware of our program and what it's, you know, what it's doing for the child. And honestly, you know, I've spent a lot of time in Eastern Kentucky. We've seen a lot of different situations. Absolutely, you know, children coming from abusive households, but also children coming from absolutely incredible households where their parents are just so involved in, you know, doing everything they possibly can, and really they just need a little bit of extra help because, you know, when one parent loses their job, it's you know, all of a sudden they have half an income and they have to pay a heating, you know, bill at the same time that the car breaks down. And it's just, I've, you know, seen these families over and over again where they just can't seem to catch a break. And so, you know, with our sponsorship program, it's one less thing to worry about because they're like, well, you know, I've got all these hard things going on, but at least I know, you know, my kid is receiving, you know, a backpack full of food on the weekend, and that's really helpful. Or a new school outfit, you know, when school starts, and support in other ways, you know, on a monthly basis. So it makes a really big difference for families.
Yeah, and I think a way of looking at accountability is that you all are an accountability partner, and we all need that. With accountability, there's also an added level of support that these families want their children to be involved, since they do have to consent. And so it's just more support for them. And I think we all need that accountability partner to help us just stay on track with our goals and what's healthy for us. And so I think you provide, in addition to just the concrete needs of food and education and healthcare, that the underlying psychosocial and emotional supports that also come along with that over time.
Yeah, absolutely. I do agree. And it's our, the families that we are able to, you know, help because of their children are enrolled in our program are so grateful for it. You know, they've told us, I've heard so many stories over and over again of they really wouldn't know what they would do without our program. And it, like I said, it's $30 a month to sponsor a child. It's a really small amount of money if you think about it, especially for us living in the United States, you know, where, we don't, you know, we might not really, you know, have faced the kind of, you know, poverty that you might see abroad, or be really aware of, you know, the kind of poverty that exists, you know, right here in our own country. But it makes a really, really big difference for families that are, you know, struggling just day to day and having to make a lot of hard decisions about, you know, how they're going to make ends meet.
Yeah, and you mentioned something a few moments ago, Shelley, that I want to highlight for our listeners, is you mentioned a backpack full of food, which I noticed in researching you all, the backpack feeding. Can you talk to our listeners about that really awesome service and program?
Sure. Our backpack feeding program is something that we have been doing for quite a few years now, and it really stemmed from our volunteer coordinators in where we work in Eastern Kentucky and in West Virginia, and then also in areas of Arizona and New Mexico, where we have quite a few projects on Indian reservations in those states. our coordinators were informing us that, you know, children, a lot of times that are living in poverty, are getting free or reduced lunches twice a day, and they but they might not be eating on the weekends. And really, it came up because the coordinators would notice that the kids would show up to school on Monday, and they're exhausted and they're tired, they're just really lethargic, and it was from not having enough. They're not being enough food when all of a sudden the weekend comes around. You got 2 days where that child's not getting breakfast or lunch at school, and there's just not enough food in the household to feed everybody. So our backpack feeding program is really, really important to us and to the children that we support, because what it means is that it's most often prepackaged food. It's things like macaroni and cheese in a cup, or a can of ravioli, things that children can even make on their own.
Yeah.
Honestly, because we take in consideration that their parents might not be around because they might be working late on the weekend. So we want to make sure that it's something that a child could prepare on their own easily, pop-top cans kind of stuff, because, there was such a growing concern for the fact that these children were not eating at all on the weekends when they weren't in school.
And it's heartbreaking to just think of children not having food. And it's such an important service then that they can heat, they can prepare those items, which kids naturally like anyway, and they're calorie dense, so it might help them stay full longer until they can get to school. Because our brain doesn't even function without calories. We have to eat for our brain to just work, and our sympathetic nervous system to function properly. So I was like really happy to see and how brilliant that is, that that's a program that you all offer for children that participate and need that.
Yeah, it really is amazing. It's super hard to think about children going without food when you're not, it's not a part of your regular life. But you're absolutely right. If they're malnourished and they're falling asleep in class because they haven't had anything to eat and they can't concentrate, they are, they're more likely to get sick. They're more likely to be absent because of that. And that's just like a downward spiral, more absence, more sickness. And then, they're falling behind in school. They get discouraged. They drop out. And that's all the things that we're trying to keep from happening to these kids, because they just really need to be supported so they have, just as many opportunities as children, who are, who have access to, basic necessities on a day-to-day basis. And we do not want children that are living in poverty to, not get a chance to break that cycle of poverty. And if, it really just comes down to providing, things that we take advantage on a regular basis, like having meals or having, proper shoes. We have kids that don't go to school because they're sharing shoes with their siblings. I mean, it's just wild things that you really wouldn't even think about. But, we hear about it on a regular basis.
And that sounds to me like a benefit of having the coordinator on site in the community to know those nuances of what's going on in these families and in their unique home situations. You would never know that if you just, say, send money to a fund that isn't as specific, I think, in its dissemination.
No, you're exactly right. We would never know those specifics if it weren't for those volunteer coordinators that are seeing the children 5 days a week, and if they need to check in on them on the weekends, if they feel like they need to do a home visit and make sure that things are going okay. So we would never know. And another thing that we're able to do, thanks to our donors, that were is just really life-changing for families in need, is we have a special fund called our Hope in Action Fund. And the reason that fund exists is so that we can go above and beyond our sponsorship program for children for even more particular needs. For example, we had a real sweet a girl that was sponsored in had a sponsor in Eastern Kentucky, and she you know, very much needed to wear corrective eyeglasses because otherwise, you know, she had an issue with her eyes that her eye would cross so badly that she would get headaches and she couldn't pay attention in the class and, you know, she couldn't focus at all. And she'd broken her glasses over the summer. And, you know, we would have never known that. And, you know, so she shows up to school without her glasses. You know, that's not something that we would typically think of as, you know, you would typically think of is what our sponsorship funds are going to. But we were so grateful because our coordinator wrote us an email immediately and said, look, you know, she came to school, she doesn't have glasses, she can't even see the chalkboard, she's going to fall behind immediately. We've got to do something like right now. And thanks to our Hope in Action Fund, we were able to send, you know, what we consider to be emergency funds, you know, directly to our coordinator so she could get her, you know, this, she could get this student a eye exam, a brand new pair of glasses, you know, and make sure she, you know, was not falling behind in school at all because of this issue. And we've been able to do that in so many different capacities. We have been able to help families with emergency relief during floods or even mudslides in Eastern Kentucky. We've been able to buy mattresses for families. Once the coordinator did a home visit and found that everybody was sleeping on the floor of a home, you know, and if children aren't sleeping well, they're not going to be able to go to school and do well. And there's just so many more examples of things like that that we're able to do, which is really incredible.
And I think what you're speaking of ties back to the in the mission of opportunity. We don't know who these kids are going to become as a result of the investment in them. This young girl to get her specialized glasses, or the family that needs a mattress to sleep on. I saw that program as well, that it's just an investment in who they will become, and it's will probably be exciting to see. I know that you keep track of the children as long as they are a participant, which is kindergarten or age 5 through high school or age 18, and then afterwards there's not official records that you maintain on the participants, is that correct, on the children?
After that point, we don't typically keep records of the children. After the child's 18 years old, the sponsor is more than welcome to maintain contact with them because they are a legal adult.
That's
we have
cool.
lots of sponsors that stay in contact with their former sponsored children and still communicate with them and, you know everything that's going on in their lives as they've moved on to higher education or gotten a job or started a family. And we're able to, you know, help people to have that, like, long-term connection, which is really great. But we don't maintain direct contact because it is a lot of children that we have in the program that are graduating. But what is really cool is a lot of times that they do get in touch with us after they've graduated and they've gone on to college or university or, you know, a career. And they will, you know, or keep in touch with their volunteer coordinator who'll communicate with us. And I've heard some great stories over the years about our former sponsored children that have graduated and then gone on to become, you know, teachers or, you know, work within the school system and become, you know, administrators, really will, you know, oftentimes, you know, credit their experience having a sponsor and realizing, you know, what that sponsorship was, what did for them growing up. And then, you know, by the time it was, you know, their turn to pick a career for themselves, they, you know, wanted to do something that was, giving back to other children in need. We even have a couple of our former sponsored children that have come back and are now volunteer coordinators for us.
That's
at some of
awesome.
Our projects, which is really cool.
That's so cool. So I'm wondering, Shelley, how do families and children participate with you all? How do they get on board with this?
So all of the children that are enrolled in our program are are enrolled because of our volunteer coordinators who have noticed that they have that these children could really use some help with, you know, they see the child show up without a winter coat. And it's, you know, below freezing outside, and they come to school in a T-shirt. And, you know, they can tell that the child is, you know, shows up on the first day of school without a book bag at all and no school supplies. So our volunteer coordinators will speak with the parents about, you know, if they'd be if interested in enrolling the child in our program. And then after that point, we work really hard to try to get sponsors for our children. So at any point, we usually have around 2,000 children that are enrolled in our program, but that do not have a sponsor right now. So by no means do we ever really have to go, you know, seek out children in need, which is, you know, an unfortunate thing about, right, you know, reality about how many children are living in poverty and are in need. So we are always trying to, you know, talk about, you know, how important sponsorship is and how valuable it is and how incredible of an impact that one person can have on a child, so that hopefully, you know, we can motivate people to see the value in sponsorship and want to you know, jump on board with us and help a child in a really great way.
And so you all operate in 23 countries right now, including the U.S. Are there certain cities or areas where there's more need for sponsors right now in comparison to other locations?
Oh, that's such a great question, 'cause we definitely try to focus on, you know, all of the countries that we work in and all of the cities we work in the U.S. For many different reasons. We really like to show the diversity of what we do, as well as, you know, knowing that some, you know, interested sponsors might be drawn to a certain, you know, certain area. But right now we really are focusing on some of our inner city projects within the U.S. And so, and we currently work in New Orleans, Louisiana, Detroit, Michigan, Richmond, Virginia, where our office is located, and Washington, D.C., and our inner city division is younger than a lot of our other divisions, you know, in the rural United States and then abroad. We've really only had our inner city division for about 10 years, which is not long compared to the 50 plus years that we've been an organization. So we are really focusing on telling those stories and highlighting, you know, some of our coordinators in those places and some of the schools and the projects and really what, you know, what particular issues that a lot of the inner city children face that might be different from, you know, other areas of the United States.
Yeah, I know that I would love to sponsor a child in New Orleans since I've been a social worker for over 20 years and I started my career in the nonprofit sector. I did some work with child protection, running groups for children that were sexually abused and working with people that were in poverty. And I did that for a number for 10 years. And then I shifted into private practice and came out to Los Angeles almost 4 years ago. And it was kind of hard to pull away being full-time in New Orleans because I love my community there so much. And the level of need for children is high, that a lot of children do not have books that are in public school in New Orleans. There's no books. And how are they going to learn without books? And so I know that's something that is really resonating with me as we're talking, that I'd love to sponsor a child that lives there since I'm dividing my time and spending time in Los Angeles, which is like a new love of a community and city for me that just feels like a really good way to stay in touch and be of service.
Yeah, that's really amazing, and it's people just like you that are, you know, are drawn to a certain place, and especially when you really realize, you know, what it's like for kids there because you've lived somewhere or you've visited there, or maybe you've just done research about a certain area, you know, or a certain country because it has, you know, interest interest for you. But yeah, New Orleans especially is a really incredible place that, you know, has gone through a lot. You know, we still talk about a lot of issues with Hurricane Katrina, right. And but, you know, also you know, the school systems that are, you know, not up to par for children who are in need. And then, you know, children, we talk a lot with our inner cities about children also living in food deserts, which in the city, which is, you know, if you're not familiar with that, it's, you know, even if a child is living in a community where they might be surrounded by, you know, businesses, oftentimes in communities that are more impoverished, there are no, even though there might be convenience stores around, that there's no access to fresh foods and vegetables and, you know, quality food that children can eat. So, you know, those are considered to be food deserts. And, you know, it's a concern that, you know, not just that children are getting food, but they have options of, you know, they need to be able to eat well to be healthy. So it's really, really interesting what children really face in inner cities that, you know, is different from more rural communities.
Definitely. All the different levels of need and different types of need, I'm thinking, are different. I know you work with the Navajo Nation as well, and just curious about in that community, what might some of the unique needs be in comparison?
A lot of times those needs really have to do with families living in very, very remote places that are really far away from schools, really far away from jobs. Families living in poverty don't have any transportation. They have no way to get to jobs. The buses getting kids to school often are going down roads that become impassable in the winter months or when it's raining really hard. And so children don't get picked up for school. Oftentimes, we're really grateful that we partner with some really great schools in New Mexico, where the schools there have dormitories that the children live at during the week. So that serves, you know, a few really important purposes for these children. Not only the families not have to worry about whether or not the child is getting to school and transporting them there, you know, from really long distances every single day, but when the child's staying at the dorm during the week, they're also getting fed three meals a day. And so, you know, families don't have to be as concerned for, you know, their child's well-being in situations like that. But yeah, it's we have families that don't have electricity, that, you know, their houses are, you know, severely lacking for just, you know, basics, and it's really difficult to know that these children are, you know, growing up like that without, you know, really a sense of you know, hope for the future.
Right. Are there any, I'm trying to think of things that I think listeners might be interested to know about you all. Are there other questions and information that's helpful for us to know from you, Shelley? And even I'm curious how you came to work with Children Incorporated.
Oh, sure. I am also a social worker.
Awesome.
I got my master's in social work about 10 years ago, and I started working for a very small nonprofit organization for quite a while that was local here in Richmond, Virginia. And after some time, I decided that I would like to, you know, expand the work that I was doing outside of my small community, and also, you know, get a chance to look at, you know, the nonprofit world from an international standpoint. And Children Incorporated really fit that perfectly for me because we also work right here in Richmond, Virginia. So we've got this local tie, but, you know, we're also doing work all around the world. And it's really been a very eye-opening experience for me to be able to just see what again, I can't emphasize enough what a small amount of money is able to do to really change the lives of children.
Yes.
It's really incredible for something that, you know, is the cost of going out to eat one night a month, you know, will be the difference between a child staying in school, going to school at all, you know, and having the chance at, you know, hopefully having more opportunities later in life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I don't know that there's a transition, but it's something I wanted to highlight that there, we've been speaking mostly of the personal sponsorship level, which I plan to do and which I'm sure other listeners might be moved to do as well. You all offer other ways that individuals, businesses, and corporations can get involved. I read as far as employee matching gift programs, hosting a fundraiser, legacy giving. Can you talk to us about some of the other options in case there's someone listening that wants to contribute in a different way to you all?
Yeah, absolutely. We have quite a few special funds that we have all throughout the year at any time that we are welcome to take donations to of any amount. No amount too small, of course, no amount too large. And it covers a wide range of things outside of our sponsorship program. So as I had mentioned, we have a mosquito net fund. For $10, you can buy a mosquito net for a child, which is going to, you know, help protect them from mosquito-borne illnesses, keep them healthy so that they can go to school. Those mosquito nets help children in Kenya and Ethiopia, India and Sri Lanka. We're very proud that we're able to distribute thousands of mosquito nets to sponsor children and their families each year. We have, like you mentioned, like we were discussing, our U.S. feeding program really covers our backpack feeding. So children in the United States that might otherwise not have food on the weekends, we're making sure that they get that. They're able to take a book bag full of food home. We also have an international feeding program, so that for, you know, internationally, sometimes children are not fed at school. They have to, you know, bring their own food or maybe go without. So we are able to support a lot of our schools so that we are not just feeding the children that are in our program at the school, but we're feeding all the children at the school to make sure that they're receiving at least a few meals a day during the school week. We also have our warm clothing fund, which goes to providing coats and boots and winter clothes for children in the winter. So that's, again, that's beyond our sponsorship program. So if our volunteer coordinators see children that do not have sponsored, that are coming to school without, you know, winter coats, we make sure that, you know, they're able to request funds from that and help children in that capacity. We've got a tutoring program fund because we support tutoring programs in South America. And that's just a few of them. Our website has all of them listed with descriptions and stories about how these funds have been able to make a big impact on children all over the world. So it's really exciting how many different areas we'll really be able to touch the lives of children and families in need.
Absolutely. I'm so excited that I was put in touch with you, Shelley, and with Children Incorporated. So I know you're going to send a link later, because I asked for our listeners a link that they might click on my LA Talk Radio show page to become involved. Until then, what is the best way for listeners to reach you all and get in touch?
Yeah, visiting our website is the best way to find out about more of our work and how to get involved, and that's at www.childrenincorporated.org.
Awesome. Do you have anything that we have not covered yet to leave our listeners with before we conclude for today?
I don't think so. I appreciate all the wonderful questions. Thank you so much.
No, you're welcome. I loved our time together and that you're a social worker and your organization is just amazing. Amazing.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for being with us today, Shelley.
Thank you.
You're bye-bye. Welcome. Bye-bye. That concludes my show for today with Shelley Callahan of ChildrenIncorporated.org. Please join me next week as I bring you another guest. And as always, I hope you have a really awesome week. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to All Things Therapy with Lisa Tahir.